The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, my good man.
Welcome, everyone. It's time for On the Couch with Sick and Bloom.
A lot of crazy things.
Looking at fantasy football from a deeper place.
This is going to be a changing day in your life.
And now here's your host, Sigmund Bloom.
But I would not phone my mother.
Who is heating up just in time for the playoffs? That and more this week on the couch. Always a distinct pleasure to be joined by Paul Charchian. Paul, who are going to be our league winners just in time for the fantasy playoffs?
Well, you know, you prepped me that this topic was coming. And so I want to say, like, you know, if we're going to talk about who's heating up for the playoffs, I don't think it's fair to say, you know, like, Travis Kelce.
Yeah, you know, sure.
He's already hot.
Right.
I think I'm taking this as to players that, you know, a little bit, maybe not as blatant an example as Amon-Ra St. Brown last year, who
right.
turned into a stone cold league winner. But I've identified a player at each of the four key positions that I think is has emerging hotness that can help power teams through the playoffs.
Yeah. So, okay, well, and like you said, it's not Josh Jacobs. Come on. It's not Devontae Adams. Let's start at quarterback, because quarterback is a really interesting position, because their quarterback, like Tyler Huntley, it might be on the waiver wire, Mike White, that you might be saying, is that better than what I have? Or from the waiver wire strategy, we're not going to get too deep into that. We did that show already today. But or should I add them just to keep someone else from having them? But who's the heating up just at the right time at quarterback?
You mentioned Josh Jacobs. The Raiders are busy turning Josh Jacobs into 2014's DeMarco Murray, as mm-hmm. they're just grinding him up to kick him off into free agency, to let somebody else pick up the shattered yeah. remains of his career. Derek Carr, multiple touchdowns in five straight games, a leaky enough defense to keep the ball in his hand often. A relatively favorable schedule. Devontae Adams, obviously a complete force to deal with. So the injuries, yeah. the other injuries haven't really seemed to affect him that much. I think Derek Carr quietly is turning into one of those players that you can sort of just start and forget about and get a good enough score to win games and isn't hurting you.
Yeah. And you look at the schedule, and that one of the things that we can keep in mind at this point is that we understand, based on the schedule, really what we're looking at. There's not what we have. There'll be some variance in terms of injuries mm-hmm. and players will warm or cool off. But I think we have a good grasp on the teams now. And of course, there's teams that could fall to the playoffs and things change there. But Vegas has at the Rams.
Rams, that's turned into
that's
what?
Not a scary, yeah.
A neutral matchup?
Neutral at worst. Yeah.
Slightly mm-hmm. positive matchup.
New England,
yeah.
Pittsburgh, San Francisco. But the thing is, Josh Jacobs, like you said, they're grinding him up. It's kind of unfair. But, you know, Josh Jacobs is that kind of player that he's going to play that hard. If he was just paying for the league minimum, he would give everything he had. There's a Josh Jacobs story coming up later related to guillotine leagues.
Oh.
Paul knows what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we'll get back to that. And Derek Carr has been consistent. One thing that occurs to me when you bring up Devontae Adams, when first of all, Devontae Adams is playing as high
a
level of football as a wide receiver can play. I'm talking charge. I'm talking like when we were watching Jerry Rice at his peak, Marvin Harrison, Terrell Owens, these kind of guys, he's playing at a Hall of Fame level. And you know how I would express this? It just feels like when the ball's in the air, and you see 17 is the target, that it's going to get caught. Like, it's just inevitable.
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter what the coverage looks like. It doesn't matter what the trajectory of the ball looks like. It's just inevitable, and it's something to behold. And from a fantasy standpoint, Paul, we're both old enough to remember when in fantasy football they said, if a wide receiver is changing teams.
Yeah, right. That was it's over.
Yeah, and both with him and Tyreek Hill, boy, that was wrong this year.
That?
AJ Brown, boy, that was wrong this year. Okay.
And for Tyreek Hill, I mean, here, you know, here he is, your league leader in receiving yards. Patrick Mahomes, the league leader in passing yards.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, isn't it funny that the Tyreek Hill trade makes us appreciate both of those players more?
Yeah.
And so these stories, again, we're far enough into the season where we can really see what the major stories are going to be. We're still not quite sure how they're going to intersect to create league champions, but we know that Josh Jacobs, and of course, we can also go back to all the reports. He's going to be in a committee. It's Patriots backfield, Josh McDaniels, and Josh Jacobs says, no, I can. Here's how this team can win. If you give me the ball, we're going to win.
Before we move off quarterbacks, because you made passing reference to Tyler Huntley, and I'm fascinated by this. Mm-hmm. I am in the extreme minority that believes if it really does come down to Lamar Jackson demanding to be the highest paid quarterback, that Baltimore is going to blink and they're not going to do it. Yeah. And this, I think, is going to be, if this turns into a 2 or 3 week test for Tyler Huntley, or at least Baltimore doesn't want to do it. If this turns into a test for Tyler Huntley to see, you know, can we just get enough out of Tyler Huntley to win mostly the way we have been winning with our defense? I think there's a chance that this thing plays out that way in the offseason more than people realize. Everybody just assumes it's going to work out. If Lamar Jackson really does want to be the highest paid quarterback, and there's certainly a case to be made for him to do that, I don't know if the team's going to do it. Tell me what you think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, look, if we're going to just be coldly analytical about this, Paul, that there isn't a deal yet it means you have to be open to that Jackson's going to end up on another team. He's going to end up traded because if there was a meeting of the minds. We were talking about this with Dak Prescott not that long ago, where rational management would dictate that. I would almost look at it in the current NFL, Paul, as once you have a quarterback that gets you out of quarterback purgatory,
yes,
you marry that quarterback. Mm-hmm. You marry that quarterback for your fan base, for your coaching staff, for the team. And the other thing is you can know, we all can see that Lamar Jackson is one of those true leaders without words, right? Just the intensity and focus and competitiveness that he brings to the game is the same way that the Ravens, Ray Lewis embodied one version of the Ravens. Lamar Jackson embodies that. So you would think that Steve Biscotti, Eric DaCosta would say, this is our team as long as Lamar Jackson is here. And they haven't. And the assembly line process of signing quarterbacks to extensions should be, again, if the quarterback has gotten you out of quarterback purgatory, when they get extended, they're the highest paid quarterback in the
league. That's usually how it goes. That's
until the next guy.
When their time comes up. That's right.
Right.
Which could be 2 weeks later, or in some cases, 2 days later.
Right. So it's not a big deal to say he's the highest paid quarterback in the history of the league. Whoever's turn is up, if you're in the top 10 or so quarterbacks, you're going to be the highest paid quarterback in the league when your turn is up. So you're right to point that out. And Tyler Huntley's performance. Now, let's put for fantasy football, there might not be that much of a difference between Lamar Jackson and Tyler Huntley. For football, there is a massive, massive difference. But what's going to be funny, Paul, because fantasy football, we're all to blame here. The blood's on our hands, right? What's funny is that if Huntley performs as well as Lamar Jackson from a fantasy standpoint, or even if they eke out wins against mediocre teams like last week, you are going to hear people say, why not pay Tyler Huntley rookie contract money and let Lamar Jackson get traded somewhere? And isn't that going to be better for the franchise? But they don't understand that that team it's a family, and Lamar Jackson's the head of that family. And it's not that simple. It's not as simple as money. It's not as simple as production. So you're right, and I think that we have to be open to that possibility, and I just hope that wherever Lamar Jackson ends up, because he's a joy to watch, he's appreciated. And, hey, I'm a Steelers fan, too, so, you know, when Lamar Jackson fell to them as a Steelers fan, I was distraught. That Steelers took Terrell Edmonds over Lamar Jackson in that draft.
Oh.
I was distraught. So yeah. It's the Ravens, because it was Ozzie Newsome. It was like his parting gift, you know?
Yeah.
If they blow it, if they mess it up, well, I mean, and still the Steelers are where they are. Okay, running back. Who's our heating up just in the right time for running back?
How about Brian Robinson? I was very underwhelmed with his running through the first, whatever, six games or so. But his last couple, man, he's run with so much power. It's like He's finally running the way his body was meant to, punishing defenders. And the last couple of games have been really good, averaging over 5 yards per carry over those two games after not hitting 4 yards per carry in any game prior to that. And because Washington's got that terrific defense and a limited passer, the game script is always going to go through their running backs. So, I think Dorian Robinson, there's a chance, eyeball test, schedule, just the makeup of that team. I think there's a chance he's going to be one of these guys that you just, you put into your flex spot every week and he ends up being a real helper the rest of the way.
Yeah. And, I just to give this discussion, I know this is anti-couch kind of talk, a little more form and function. I want to just go back to quarterback once for 1 second and just add some other names people might be thinking about. Jared Goff. And in the question of to pick up if it's Goff or Huntley on the waiver wire this week, that's Goff. And
if you want to win this week, it's Goff.
Yeah, absolutely. Huntley has a tough matchup against the Steelers. Mm-hmm. And Mike White belongs in the conversation, but for Robert Saleh is saying the plan is for Zach Wilson to still play this year. I'm going to scream, Paul. No, I'm going to scream.
That's not going to happen.
Right?
It's not going to happen. Those are things that you say to not demoralize your young player.
Yeah,
I think. I hope. You say it publicly, but inside the locker room, it's so blatant.
You would hope. Mm-hmm. Deep name as a potential league winner.
Quarterback.
Josh Johnson.
That is deep.
Josh Johnson.
So you get some mobility that he has. You get a functional enough quarterback to have been on 13 experience. Different rosters. Yeah. And as we've really said about Jimmy Garoppolo for years, just put the ball in your playmakers' hands and let them go be special. And it doesn't take a special quarterback to let Deebo Samuel be special and Brandon Ayuk be special. So
Kittle, Christian McCaffrey. Yeah. And Josh Johnson in on the 49ers roster during this era. So if you're saying, well, Brock Purdy knows the offense, so does Josh Johnson.
Yeah.
So does Josh Johnson.
Great point.
So
do you want to put your prognostication hat on and tell me where Baker Mayfield is going to be in
Rams? I mean,
it's
not prognostication. I think it's just hearing that, I think maybe Mike Florio, Albert Breer have both said they're connecting the Rams to Mayfield. I think Matthew Stafford, it's great that he got a Super Bowl. I hope he doesn't have any long lasting effects from a spinal contusion.
Yeah. Right.
We probably have seen him play his last down.
Isn't that a real possibility that nobody's talking about?
I hope it is. Look, we hear a lot about brain injuries. Brain damage. Let's be honest about what it is. We hear a lot about brain damage, Paul, but when you hear about spinal cord damage, that's time to hang it up, folks.
That's time to hang it up. Wheelchair stuff, potentially.
Yeah, that's enough to say, what else is there left for me to accomplish in this game? Money-wise, championship-wise, legacy-wise, Matthew Stafford has done it all. So I think it is going to be Baker Mayfield to the Rams, because if you look at the three teams ahead of them, the Texans, the Broncos, and the Bears, there's just no reason for those teams. I mean, the Texans could have had Baker Mayfield like four different times. So they don't want him.
No, clearly don't want him. Do you believe if it slides to Seattle, one game behind San Francisco, do you think they would do it just to block?
Paul, we've got Sabotage Drop out into the hive mind. And more than one person, when Baker Mayfield asked for his release in my mention, said Sabotage Drop.
Mm-hmm.
So was Seattle thinking that way? I mean, we're off on a Baker Mayfield tangent, and that's okay because it's on the couch. I would not, under any circumstances, want to add Baker Mayfield to my locker room right now. No, it's a family, man. I don't want Baker Mayfield coming into my Christmas dinner. Not right now. Not at this point in the season.
Think one more step down the path. And obviously, I think it depends on what your goals are and who else you might have. And you need to be thinking multiple weeks down the road. Like, do I need a playoff win with my backup quarterback? If Geno Smith goes down, who is Seattle's backup? Geno Smith goes down.
Let's see, how bad is it? I can't even think. I don't even know.
Your backup is it's Drew Lock, of course. It's Drew
Lock. That's right.
Of course.
He was warming up on the sideline last week. That's right.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there some team out there that does that? I don't know. It'll be fascinating to see. This is one of the very few times where there's all this strategy, potential strategy involved in a player hitting the waiver claim system. And you know, a team might take a player they don't even necessarily want.
Well, that's a bear.
We never get that.
Well, not just that, Paul. So we're drilling down on the Baker Mayfield waiver topic.
Waiver claim.
Hey, every topic in football is tangential to every other topic, and it's all interesting. Here's the question about Baker Mayfield. Number one. How did your organization evaluate him? Did you have him as a number one pick? If Baker Mayfield doesn't go number one, he probably doesn't fall out of the top 12 or 15 picks, but he might have fallen farther than we think. The Browns at that point in their organization, I think, were more inclined to look at numbers and try to think they were shrugging off old school scouting. They would say he's too short, he's not athletic enough. Mm-hmm. His production was created by structure around him. So first of all, what does your organization think of Baker Mayfield? Like, or what do they think of him when they worked him up? But second of all, and I'm even leaving out all the stuff about, you know, all that moxie stuff. It was bad. That was bad.
Yeah, like, there was bad juju there for sure.
Yeah, that stuff was bad. All that, all of Baker Mayfield's like attitude and like, yeah, I'm going to draw this attention negative and positive. That was bad. I mean, that was a negative indicator in hindsight. But also, we've seen him play for Carolina now, and he's not good. I mean, he's a backup quarterback. And that's all he is. He's not even Colt McCoy level backup quarterback. So I think that maybe at the beginning of the season, there was more of this unknown mystery box about him. Like maybe it was just, he was got a raw deal in Cleveland, but now I don't think that there's a lot of mystery about that. I think it's clear that whatever happened when everything was surging, that was great. The surroundings created this great moment, getting Cleveland back to the playoffs. And he almost beat Kansas City after Patrick Mahomes got hurt, but that was then, this is now. And now we've watched him play enough this year to say, I don't think he's going to help a team. And I think if you bring him into a playoff locker room, now maybe behind the scenes he's like really contrite and is like, I get it, and I call it the career near-death experience. Like, he's had a career near-death experience. Yeah. Now
yes,
he's
asking
for his release, and maybe he's learned something from it, but I don't want it that my team, my locker room, to be the laboratory.
All right, so if you're Seattle, which is the most motivated team to simply take him to block the 49ers, you're gonna let Baker Mayfield pass through waivers because of the sabotage drop. You want to inject him into the 49ers locker room and give them the Baker Mayfield experience.
Yeah. And plus, you already know that Brock Purdy at least has command of the offense.
Yes.
Josh Johnson has command of the offense, has a ton of NFL experience, and he's mobile. So I'm not really sure that Baker Mayfield represents any kind of upgrade from them. And Baker Mayfield and all of his baggage, if you put him into like a playoff intensity game, you really want to count on him to hold up for your team to be able to make the throw that you need, the play that you need, in the moment that you need? So yeah, this is our, we're dunking on Baker Mayfield, but I think that, you know, that's where we're at in his arc. That's where we're at in his story. Okay. Getting back to running backs. And I think Brian Robinson is an excellent, we're going all the way back to Washington. And what's great to see about Washington is Taylor Heineke's throwing the ball better. That's a great story, by the way. It's his team. That's awesome. Heineke is throwing the ball better, but like you said, they're still giving Brian Robinson all the work he can handle. This is a winning team. So when I was real lukewarm on Brian Robinson, because I didn't have this as a winning team, you know, Paul, I thought we'd see Sam Howell by now.
Yeah.
We knew it wasn't going to be Carson Wentz, but we didn't know that Heineke was going to play like this. And Ron Rivera and the way they have this team playing. So Brian Robinson aligns perfectly because he doesn't add a lot of value to his runs beyond the physicality, but that's what they want. That's what they want. So he's getting 25 carries for 90 yards, but getting a touchdown. He's getting a few surprise catches, including one for a touchdown. And Washington's going into a bye, so he's going to be fresh, right? Defenses aren't fresh. Right. He's fresh. Yep. So I agree with that one. Other potential getting hot just at the right time running backs, DeAndre Swift. That was almost too easy, right? He looks like a league winner again in that offense. A.J. Dillon. I know Dave Kluge brought up in the chat room. Finally, this is what we envision when we're taking. I say we because I took A.J. Dillon in a lot of leagues.
I got him too. I got a lot of shares.
Now, let's just say this, though, Paul. unlike other years when we would be saying, if you survive taking this player early, he's coming. Like, there are a lot of times that a player would get hot at the end of the season during the fantasy playoffs, and we'd say, well, yeah, but you didn't make the playoffs because you took them. DeAndre Swift was a second round pick.
Yeah.
Fantasy football this year, well, I'm going to ask you to examine the statement, but I'm going to make the statement. It's been more chaotic than any year that we can remember, or more unstable or volatile. So I don't think it's the old saying, you can't win your league in the first round, you can't lose it. You can't lose your league in the first round anymore either. You can't lose your league in the second round. You can't lose your league even if you mess up your first and second round picks, because of the amount of volatility and amount of shifting of values over the course of the season. It's always a lot more than we think when we're projecting and drafting. But it's been even more so this year, so that all those teams have survived. I mean, look, if you didn't make the playoffs and you took DeAndre Swift in the second round, it's not simply because you took DeAndre Swift. It's not simply because you took A.J. Dillon in the fifth round, or Cortland Sutton in the fourth round, or Allen Robinson in the fourth round, et cetera, et cetera. This fantasy football continues, I think, Paul, to reward perseverance and focus, continually attacking the new problems of that week more than nailing your draft, or just being an oracle and being able to see the future before anybody else can. I think it's just it's caring about it. But Paul, you've been doing this longer than I have. Do you feel like this year has been more volatile and chaotic than a typical year?
This is a year in which you've been rewarded for adapting in season more than most. And that's, I think, if you tell me, like, I can hedge my bets with somebody who has a really good draft, or I can hedge my bets with a fantasy manager who's really attuned to what's happening during the season and adapting to what they're seeing on Sundays, I want that person. And I think this is a year where you've been rewarded more so than most for those people that were willing to throw out their preconceived notions, willing to accept, you know, some humility on the things that they were wrong about, move on from players that didn't work out, move to players who were emerging. I think this is a year where you got rewarded for that more than most.
We really need, I've been bringing this up a lot, the Serenity Prayer. I brought it up like 3 or 4 times. We need like the Serenity Prayer for fantasy football, right? I mean, where accepting the things you cannot change is so important in fantasy football. My, oh my.
Isn't it great that we all get humbled? There's nobody who plays this game for more than a couple of seasons and we're in a couple of leagues that doesn't get humbled. And it's healthy for us all to get knocked down a peg every so often.
Yeah, this is that classic, like, the wisdom is knowing what you don't know. And the older you get and the more wisdom and experience you have, the more you realize you don't know. But it is glorious when you're at that point in your life when you think you know everything. That's an awesome feeling. We know we don't know everything. We don't know very much, much more than nothing. What do we know at wide receiver? Who's heating up?
Let me give you one more backfield. Okay. Backfield. That. What do you think of Baltimore? And we get all the weirdness that happened with Gus Edwards last week, and now J.K. Dobbins coming back, and it feels like the safe play is just a void at this point. But sometimes these are the moments of uncertainty where, you know, you find help. Couldn't get myself quite to the point of including J.K. Dobbins on my list, but I want to will it to happen. But I suspect I'm probably trying too hard, and now that both Gus and J.K. are going to be there, there might just not be a path here.
And Lamar Jackson is out, at least for the time being. Look, here's my problem with the Ravens offense at this point. They just have no identity and no consistency. They have no momentum. They have no momentum at an offense whatsoever. Well, that's with Lamar Jackson. Yeah, they did before. You felt the collective groan through Ravens land whenever Tyler Huntley scored that touchdown, only because they thought maybe this will get Greg Roman fired, but maybe he doesn't have to get fired. Maybe he'll go, when you see those reports, he might take over at Stanford. There's prayer candles lit for sure that Greg, because then, and this goes back to that Lamar Jackson discussion, because if they had, say, a Mike McDaniel type, who's the offensive coordinator, Johnson for the Lions, okay, instead of Greg Roman, maybe Lamar Jackson would have been signed to that top of the league contract already, because he would have been used in a much more effective way. There would have been much better offense built around him and to take advantage of what he can do. So the Ravens running game 2-3 years ago, we were toasting it, but it's toast now. And that's just where I don't want to rely on. J.K. Dobbins is such a talented player that players that talented should never be on the waiver wire. Elijah Moore, right? Players that talented should never be on the waiver wire, but they're kind of they're classic sabotage drops, Paul, in the so much that you want to talk yourself into the talent because you've seen it, but the surroundings, the situation, I just don't think it's there. So I will add one other one real quick. Zonovan Knight. Well, and James Cook, that's too obvious, right? James Cook, obviously, if you've been holding onto your waiver wire money, empty it every last dollar if you're in a shallow league and he's out there.
Yeah.
Raheem Mostert, but I know better. But Raheem Mostert, maybe.
Yeah, what do you make of that? I'm stunned by this revelation. I did not see this coming with Jeff Wilson at all. Did you? Right.
No. I mean, this has been strange, right? Where Jeff Wilson, I actually dropped him in a few leagues and then felt a great sense of remorse, but maybe I was saving myself from having to ride this roller coaster. We know Mostert has more to offer than Wilson as a runner. Wilson might have a better all-around skill set, but it's the Chargers this week. So, hey.
I know.
I wanted to. Yeah.
This. Like, you know, I've been waiting for this week with Jeff Wilson. And now.
Now, no, you're not playing him. Even though he might have 2 touchdowns and 100 total yards. You never know because of the way they've handled the backfield. I'll just toss Zonovan Knight out there.
He looked good.
He's good. He's a UDFA back rookie who has established himself. He's out James Robinson.
For sure.
And he's the starter right now. I don't know when Michael Carter is going to play again. Michael Carter could play this week and tweak his ankle again. This is a good offense. He's a good all-around running back. He's good. Not very often, Paul. I love saying this. I've said it 2 or 3 times. A running back with the nickname Bam is good in the passing game. How many times has that happened?
Never. Because right? Bam Morris was not that guy.
No. Oh, that just.
What other Bams have there been? Are there other Bams I'm not thinking of?
I'm just thinking like Bam Bam Bigelow from the old wrestling or something like that. So I guess there was Bam Bam, and that kind of counts, but I don't know. So it's Zonovan Knight, I think, as a running back. We might be underestimating his value. Jordan Mason. Why not Jordan Mason? I talked myself into this morning, Paul, because with Brock Purdy, you're going to want him to throw the ball how many times?
25
at the most, right? Like it's the Trey Lance game plan. Mm-hmm. Like, so when it was Trey Lance, the extra plays would be Trey Lance runs. With Brock Purdy, those extra plays might be Jordan Mason runs, not mm-hmm. Christian McCaffrey, because they are smart enough to not use up Christian McCaffrey like he's Derrick Henry, right? They're not going to give Christian McCaffrey the ball 30 times. They don't even want to touch the ball 30 times in a game. I think they're smart enough to know that. It's Jordan Mason, and Jordan Mason's ready. Again, those fresh legs running backs make a difference every single year in fantasy football. All right, let's turn the page to wide receiver. Who's your wide receiver to highlight here?
Marquise Brown. I don't love the schedule and I don't love Kyler Murray and I don't like their head coach, but the reality was for the first 6 weeks of the season, he had a touchdown or 68 yards in every game. He was highly reliable. First game back last week, he had a healthy 8 targets and 6 receptions. Schedule's a mixed bag. I don't love the Denver game. New England, you can get something done against, especially if Jonathan Jones ends up shadowing DeAndre Hopkins this coming week. Tampa's turned into a defense you can pass a little on. In Atlanta, you can pass a lot on. So Marquise Brown coming back, if we're talking about some players that are potentially heating up for your playoff run, I think he would qualify.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's a good one. I mean, there's some that are maybe a little bit too obvious, like Chris Godwin. I think you can see that he's going to get just a ton of tar. I mean, PPR leagues. And let's talk, you know, running wide receivers coming back from ACLs. So Michael Gallup seems like he's rounding into
form. Yeah, he was on my short list as well. Easy schedule going forward too.
Yep, absolutely. Let's see. I'm just kind of going through, you know, deep down the list.
That's fine.
Equanimeous St. Brown would surprise us. Mm-hmm. He's the number one receiver. Justin Fields is back at quarterback. And you have Detroit. Boy, Chicago-Detroit in Week 17. Could that be the matchup that determines fantasy championships, Paul? Could that be like a 47-40 kind of game?
It really could. It feels like that kind of game could easily be coming here, where you know, David Montgomery and DeAndre Swift end up being the winning combination of running backs for somebody. Hobbled, you know, you barely scraped your way into the playoffs, and then those guys finish it off for you.
Yeah, I almost want to say Treylon Burks.
Ooh.
Now he took that hit last week, but Tennessee's going to have to throw the ball. Derrick Henry's done. I mean, Derrick Henry's not done from a career standpoint, but his best football of the season's behind him. Yeah. And we talked about this on the waiver wire show this morning too, Paul, that he's taking the punishment. He's not dishing out the punishment. And Cecil described it well, where it's like defensive players love to hit quarterbacks. Well, now they're loving to hit Derrick Henry. Yeah. I mean, you just see it when you watch Tennessee games. And
it's a big target to hit. And when he's not doling it out, that's, you know, he's got that big, big upright frame. That's a big, that's a lot of territory for defenders to hit him in.
Yeah. And, you know, when you get a chance to finally hit the bully back in the nose, you swing hard. So let's see other potential league winner type receivers. There's not a lot, right? We keep wanting to anoint someone from Kansas City. That's probably not going to happen. You know, Darius Slayton is interesting. He's certainly a player who's got his confidence back and going into free agency has made himself a lot of money. DJ Chark is interesting unless Jameson Williams comes on, maybe even Jameson Williams, but I feel like they're going to bring him along pretty slow. And again, he's even further back in the ACL timeline than Michael Gallup or Chris Godwin. Remember his happened in the national championship game. So there's not a lot. I guess what I'm getting
can
at
I,
here.
Can I give you one dark horse here?
Sure.
Nobody's really talking about that I like is not the guy, again, not Amon-Ra St. Brown last year, but I think somebody that maybe this flex guy that just
sure.
helps you every week. Corey Davis.
Okay.
On the field way more than Elijah Moore, targeted 10 times last week, rolled up 85 yards, and you get a lot of usage out of Corey Davis in what has turned into a competent passing offense. And I started him in the league last week, and I think that looking ahead at the schedule, he's going to have starting grades every week of the season, the rest of the way.
Yeah. And this is a prolific offense. And even with Garrett Wilson getting his, Corey Davis still had a solid game, made a massive catch to that connection between him and Mike White, fourth down and 10 to keep the game going. Zari in the chat room brought up Mac Hollins. If teams decide to give Davante Adams the Steve Smith treatment, you say you're not going to win by throwing to Davante Adams. Even if we look terrible, that's not how you're going to win. That's an interesting one for sure. I'll bring up, you brought up the idea of somebody who could maybe not necessarily win leagues, but be very useful. I'm just going to bring up Jacoby Myers.
Yeah.
That schedule against the pass, they have Cincinnati in week 16, so that's not great. Cincinnati's defense is really coming on, but New England has Arizona this week. We'll see if Byron Murphy can play, but when Byron Murphy's not out there, Arizona's pass defense is atrocious. Mm-hmm. Vegas, and then in week 17, Miami. So those are all passing matchups that I want to get a part of. And if we remember, I mean, how much longer are we going to have to watch Mac Jones, Paul? I hope.
Well, you're talking to a guy, you know, I just watched my Vikings yield 360 yards to Mac Jones. And so
that's fair. That's fair. Now, how much of that is a product of the game script? But I'm just going back to, here's where I'm going with this. If Bailey Zappe gets back in there, Bailey Zappe and Jacoby Myers. So there was a game against Detroit earlier this year that Bailey Zappe threw for 188 yards and a touchdown, 111 and the touchdown. Went to so if Bailey Zappe takes over, I think that there's a chance that he's going to lean on Jacoby Myers because he's the safe target in that offense. And then we get to tight end, you just throw your
hand. Oh, yeah, I know. You're just right. Oh, boy.
And it really is Kelsey, right? I mean, I know that Tyler Huntley lit the fuse for Mark Andrews last year. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I think it's Kelsey, and then we're all rubbing two sticks together.
So is Kelsey, you know, why shouldn't I make Kelsey the first pick in my draft next year?
Right. I mean, assuming nothing changes.
Right. Just, you know, given what we know right now, if I were to advance the clock to next August, when's the last time somebody regretted drafting Travis Kelsey?
Right. Right. Well, and you're right. You're weighing Travis Kelsey against like Justin Jefferson and Davante Adams, probably. I mean, I think that's the choice we're looking at right now based on where things are. But you're absolutely right. Nothing's going to change. And the other thing that makes me think about is get Noah Gray in Dynasty Leagues and your tight end in Dynasty Leagues.
That's a great call.
Because eventually the torch is, and Jody Fortson's not bad either, but the torch is going to be passed. And I think Noah Gray is that guy that the torch is going to be passed to. obscure. Okay, so waiver wire tight ends, or tight end that can save you just by giving you your 8 or 10 points instead of a zero.
Well, you know, the guy I put onto this list does not meet that criteria because he's become too obvious. But Greg Dulcich with the 5.5 targets since week 7, totally erratic output because of Russell Wilson and the broken Denver offense. But nice opportunity with several positive matchups the rest of the way. And granted, you know, for our kind of listeners not deep enough to really qualify as somebody that's going to pick up that you could pick up. But that wasn't necessarily our goal. We're just about players that can power you into and through the playoffs that maybe are a little less obvious. I think Dulcich qualifies.
Absolutely. And the item this morning was that he's basically playing a wide receiver role. You know, Cortland Sutton just went down. We know there's chemistry. And again, the rookie tight end can't help you in fantasy. That's just getting blown up completely. I mean, we're going to have how many different rookie tight ends that at least have made our radar this year? Cade Otton, Isaiah Likely, Greg Dulcich, Trey McBride didn't do so much, but Daniel Bellinger. I mean, this wasn't a great tight end.
Jelani Woods looks,
looks good.
The rare moments. I wish, you know, that's a team with all the frustrating usage at the tight end position. Ugh. I wish they would just let him. You know, let Jelani Woods, you know, let's build on with the upside that he brings at his size and his athletic ability. Man, I wish they would just let the kid go out and play 60 snaps.
Yeah. Yeah. And give him 6-8 targets a game.
Yeah.
The new era Mo Alley Cox. But it's been a great year for rookie tight ends. And the rookie tight end that I think might end up taking the cake and being the one who really pulls you through. If we look down deep, and again, I already brought up two that I think are worth at least looking at, and Cade Otton and Daniel Bellinger, Jiggy Okonkwo.
Yeah.
This is a guy, Cecil called it earlier this year, really early in the season, Paul, he said he's just going to be the new Delanie Walker. I mean, he's just like, it's to the overlap and playing style and skill sets, just right there. And sure enough it is. And again, I know this much, Tennessee, if they're going to have success on offense, they're going to have to throw the ball. And Okonkwo, what's funny about Okonkwo is he has this amazing yards per catch, but what's his actual average depth of target? I mean, he's getting short passes and then just when Jonnu Smith was on, speaking of former Titans, when Jonnu Smith was on, and how he got that big contract from the Patriots is because he was a bully with the ball in his hands, and Jiggy Okonkwo is that guy. And I think that he's another one at tight end that could be really a factor that, I mean, the trends are there. You see the takeoff coming in snaps and targets and production, and it's intersecting with a Tennessee team that's going to have to throw the
ball. I love it. Now, and if we go back to your previous conversation, if we think Derrick Henry's on the wrong side of his career by a fair margin, this team can't be as run heavy as it always has been next year. And that's going to have to be a more diversified offense, whether they like it or not. And they're going to have to find some playmakers, and, you know, they don't have many others.
No, they traded away A.J. Brown, right? John Robinson traded away A.J. Brown, but John Robinson is no longer with the team. No. So you're right. And that's, Paul, in some ways, what you were just outlining was the introduction to the Tennessee job search for a new GM. You know, what's your vision for the team, knowing that Brian, 2-3 years from now, I don't know if Ryan Tannehill or Derrick Henry are going to be on this team.
Yeah.
So what's the vision? Because it's not quite a rebuild, because it's Mike Vrabel and he's going to keep them competitive. So they're not going to do the thing where they tear all down and build it back up like Detroit did. But it is a really good question. Go ahead.
And it feels like, just being what Tennessee was, you know, in their heyday, it just, the power running and the great blocking, right? I mean, they let that offensive line go from being arguably the best run blocking line in the league to now they're probably a bottom 8 overall line, and maybe worse. And you feel like, if I were rebuilding Tennessee, I would make some really key structural improvements to that offensive line that they let go to fallow.
And isn't that what Detroit is showing everybody? Build the offensive line first, and then it doesn't really matter what your identity is on offense. You can create your identity around what your players do well. You can have an offense around Jared Goff's first read is Amon-Ra St. Brown. And sometimes it's not. And you have a good running game, right? A running game plus a one-read offense. Hey, Sean McVay is nodding along, right? So you can do that if you have an offensive line. If you have an offensive line, you can have a power running game. If you have an offensive line, you can, do whatever you want.
Yeah, and it means you don't have to get, like, every draft pick doesn't have to be an A-plus, like, guy who performs so far out of spec that, you know, that he can overcome the offensive line. You know, now you just, you need guys to just perform like who you think they are when you draft them. Right. And that gives your offensive players a chance to succeed, you know, with reasonable terms. They don't have to be world beaters.
Yeah, not to pull baseball out. It's the hot stove season. But it's like you can have singles and doubles hitters if everyone's getting on base. You can run up, bring up just as many runs as the home run teams because you have consistency and execution. And yeah, that's job one for Tennessee. The day Taylor Lewin and Jack Conklin days, you know.
Yeah, right. Right.
That's in the rearview mirror now. Okay. I may have to end up a little bit early today because it's New Orleans and the termite people are going to be coming. And
I love it.
I wish people, sometimes I feel, Paul, like the conversations we have before we go live are the conversations people like even more than these conversations. I was regaling Paul with stories of my college days. Anyway, I do want to regale everybody with a great fantasy football story. It's not just a great fantasy football story. Really, it's a fantasy football story that we've all lived. But it gives me a chance to bring up guillotine leagues.
Oh, great.
If you haven't been in a guillotine league, then you need to check it out. I've made my pitch. I've written an article about it. It's basically the simplest pitch I can make is it's fantasy football with mortality every week, and it makes every decision important, and it really gets your blood flowing. And it got my blood flowing because in your league, Paul, in your all-star league, the Fabiano League with two A's.
Yes.
I was watching as I was up 1.7 points ahead of the next team when the Raiders got the ball back. And on the last play on 3rd and 4, I was 0.1 ahead of the the cut line. And the Chargers defense had Josh Jacobs lined up in the backfield for a tackle on that play and missed the tackle. I don't remember who it was. And Jacobs got 2 yards on that play. And I took the cut by 0.08 on the last
play. Brutal.
And that's how it went. And it was because Lamar Jackson got hurt. And I should have known better. I should have known better because I've been writing about Lamar Jackson's going to get hurt all year this year. And the first rule of picking your guillotine quarterback is somebody who's not going to get hurt. Not that you know in advance. Anyway.
But that's it's a great story. And then, you know, your season ends. You set your team, by the way, very good team.
I know.
I'm looking at it right here.
I had it. I had the horses
Barkley,
to go the distance.
Dalvin Cook, DK Metcalf, Amari Cooper. You knew that was going to be a tough game.
Kelsey.
Kelsey, Devontae. You lost with Devontae Adams getting you 38 points.
Yeah.
That's and then the Nick Chubb game plan that should have been not 80 yards. That should have been 160 and 2 touchdowns.
Nick Chubb and Amari Cooper, more than Lamar Jackson getting hurt, Nick Chubb and Amari Cooper underperforming in what should have been a smash spot against the Texans. But guillotine leagues are a lot of fun. Every week, if you haven't figured out, if you've never been in one, folks, every week a team gets eliminated, and then those players become available for the rest of the league. So you have potentially Christian McCaffrey on the waiver. I picked up Devontae Adams on the waiver wire because I saved my money, Paul. I was waiting for somebody worth picking up. It was Devontae Adams. He did his best to save me. But guillotine leagues are definitely where it's at. And I still love you, Josh Jacobs. You're still an awesome player.
It's no hard feelings. But these games, because for me anyway, and you know, granted, this is my thing, and so maybe it's a little closer to me, but you know, you only get so many cracks at life to have the kind of lineup that you had. I mean, you know, your lineup was absurd. It's, you know, it was so good.
Dig the knife in deeper, Paul.
Yeah, you have a sense of real loss when you got to walk away from Barkley and Cook and Metcalf and Cooper and Chubb and Adams and Kelsey. And, you know, it's like, oh, ouch.
Okay, let's go on. It hurt. But I share this. I mean, one of the things I think that's important is that it's the experience of fantasy football that is the thing that we're sharing, and we all have been at that moment. Something I was dwelling on this too much. It's meta for me to say dwelling, because one of the things about fantasy football, and I'm not sure how to relate this back to a philosophy of life, Paul, is you always remember your mistakes. You always remember your mistakes. Oh, and when your team falls just short, you hyper-analyze every decision you made and think about how you should have known better and you should have done something differently. I guess that is basically life in a nutshell too. And reminds me real quick, speaking about decisions that become symbolic of your whole life. Are you watching the World Cup? Do you even care about the World Cup?
Well, I had to go conscientious objector, say.
Oh, I understand
and
that.
I hope you can appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, you know, I just feel like everything about what Cutter did and they to get this. I mean, we know for a fact that it is not speculation that they paid off FIFA to get the rights to have it. They had to run it out of cycle. They talk about the, you know, potentially reportedly up to 6,000 people that died erecting the stadium. I mean, it's, you know, I can't do it.
Yeah, it's hey, there's a whole larger conversation here, Paul. I mean, we deal with them very moral gray area in professional football and professional sports. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff about this, but I think that it's important. And this goes back to like, should you roster Deshaun Watson and things like that? You make the decision that agrees with your conscience. And that's really the bottom line. And I think it's a very valid stance on the World Cup. And really what keeps me going back to the World Cup is the mortality. Like we were talking about with guillotine leagues and like the Olympics, this idea that for every 4 years this happens. So what you do matters. But then there are these epic stories. One of the things I saw about it that somebody said was like the diaspora team is undefeated, right? Because you're watching these players playing for France or England or you know, today it was Spain, you can look at the roster of some of these teams, Paul, and it's like a history lesson, right? About the history of that country, right? And today, Morocco beat Spain, and Spain is, you know, they're up in the upper.
This is La Liga. This is big stuff.
And you know, they're right across the Mediterranean from each other. They're looking at each other across the Mediterranean, and it was an incredible game. But the player that had the penalty kick, it was in penalties. The player that had the penalty kick, I think Hakimi was his name, that beat Spain was born in Madrid, and his mother was a house cleaner, and his father was a street vendor.
Wow. Great story.
And he sent, it's a cinematic. I mean, it's, these are the stories.
And I wonder, how do you end up on Morocco's side then, if he grew up in Spain?
Well, I think that there's rules about, you know, eligibility. You can choose the country that you play for depending on like the citizenships you have and things like that.
Wow.
So, it's, you know, it reminds me of the 98 Olympics, the first Olympics when they had, pros able to play for the gold medal.
You're talking about basketball or
it's hockey.
Hockey. Okay,
Winter
yeah.
Olympics.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, the Czech Republic won the first great tournament of tournaments among the greatest hockey powers.
Yeah.
Was not, and they beat the US, Canada, and Russia. They
amazing.
Beat Russia, the Czech Republic with Jaromír Jágr, who wears 68. Why does Jaromír Jágr wear 68? Look it up. And that then you understand why, like sports.
1968, I assume.
Yes.
And tanks and rolling into Prague.
Yes. And in 1998, the Czech Republic took down the first gold medal. Given where the professional hockey players could play in the Olympics. And it was amazing. This, the whole story of Canada and the gold medal in the Olympics too, is an amazing story. Okay. I'll turn the page to this.
By the way, just briefly, did you ever see the movie, The Unbearable Lightness of Being, or read the book?
I was a huge Milan Kundera, read like everything I could get my hands on when I was about 20 or 21. Absolutely.
Fantastic. So you
know. Oh yeah.
Great I mean, story.
Stuff that stops you in your tracks. Absolutely. And they have a statue of Frank Zappa in Prague. You know?
Do they really? Why?
Well, I think that just he, his free thinking really resonated with the people behind the curtain. And so, you know, it's lots of stuff to tease. I'll shift gears completely here because I know as we go off the rails, I know that you are as passionate about music as I am, Paul.
Yes.
And I like our conversations. And I love that I played any role at all in having vinyl in your life.
You have.
And incorporating that. So I'll say this, because this is just a chance. It's my show. I can say what I want and talk about what I want, right? I'm excited. I'm amped tonight that I am going to go see my wife, my love of my life, Kate, and I are going to go see The Smile. Does that mean anything to you?
Doesn't. Tell me about The Smile.
The Smile is
quickly Googling right now.
Tom York.
Oh.
Johnny Greenwood.
What? I did not. I should know this. Okay.
The Smile. I think that they may have already come to Minneapolis, Paul.
I can't believe I wouldn't have known that.
They're working on their second album. I'm not sure. Anyway.
You know, not that I'm knocking any of the other members of Radiohead, but these are the two most important members of Radiohead, I think, unquestionably.
Yes.
So what kind of music do they put together under
The Smile? Like it basically sounds like stripped down Radiohead. Okay. You know what? They're not coming to Minneapolis, unfortunately. On this tour, they're not coming to Minneapolis. But they're going to go in the studio for a second album. It was basically like Tom York and Johnny Greenwood's pandemic project. And then you bring in Tom Skinner, who's the drummer for Sons of Kemet. Does that mean anything to you?
Sons of Kemet's great.
Yeah.
They're the jazzy, fusion-y, sax-based band.
Sounds like ancient. Like they sound kind of like prehistoric or Egyptian or from some before time. There's a lot of great music like that.
The sax player in Sons of Kemet. He's in another band that I love.
Is it like Ezra Collective or The Comet Is Coming?
Comet Is Coming. Yes. Yeah. The Comet Is Coming.
I've seen
them live and they were fantastic.
Yeah. We got to see Ezra Collective. So there's a London scene that just has an incredible amount of jazz. And it all comes back to Giles Peterson. Like that's one of my weekly appointments is listening to the Giles Peterson show on BBC Six.
I don't know what that is.
Giles Peterson is a DJ that's been around for a long time, and his show, it's just all feel good music, but it's soulful music, and it's world music, it's funk, it's jazz, it's hip hop, it's R&B, it's just, I don't know how else to describe it. It can get clubby. There's a point in the show sometimes when you're at the club and it's 3 a.m. that might be like not necessarily where I hang out, but as we meander through all this stuff, but I'm really excited. So this is good because I know, and I figured that when I say Radiohead, that's going to resonate. So this is basically what Tom York and Johnny Greenwood are doing now with Tom Skinner. And Nigel Goodrich produced it and wrote. So it's basically, and when you listen to it, Paul, because I'm assuming this is, and you're going to go and listen to The Smile now, as you should, you'll hear that it's almost just like stripped down Radiohead. Like if someone told you this was the new Radiohead album, you'd say like, oh, it's a little bit sparse and stripped down. But yeah, this is really cool.
Wow.
So now I'm glad that this is a topic that you light up and resonates with you. Radiohead. And I guess I can tee it up for you like this. Well, I mean, first of all, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how high up, like when they show the list of the festivals, like how big are the letters that Radiohead's in on your list of like artists
I did that bit with Spotify. This would probably be second billing for me. You know, Radiohead's in heavy rotation, and I still consider the OK Computer, Kid A, Amnesiac to be like, you know, to me, it's just a series of albums that it's hard to find history of music, like three albums as consistently amazing as those three that were put out in succession. Unbelievable. And where what I think people don't appreciate with Radiohead, everybody appreciates OK Computer for what it was, and it was absolutely huge in its time. But for them to walk away from the sound of OK Computer to then do Kid A and to put that sound together was so freaking ballsy.
Yeah.
For a band that was still pretty young, and to basically just, you know, throw away the formula that had gotten them OK Computer and say, we're going to tear it all down and reinvent ourselves. I thought it was incredibly brave, and it worked. And to me, amazing albums. How do you feel?
Yes. Yeah. Well, hey, Radiohead's one of the emblematic artists of my life, right? Like I proposed to my wife while they were playing Fake Plastic Trees at the show we were at. That was her favorite.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
at the show. Okay.
At the show at ACL in 2016.
Wow.
And it's her favorite song. It's a beautiful song. It's actual, truly a fitting song for that kind of moment. But Radiohead, it's great too, because I remember so many people, Radiohead, that's depressing music. Like, why would you want to listen to that? And absolutely, I always felt like Radiohead was the heir to Pink Floyd. Hanging On in Quiet Desperation is the English Way. And I would pinpoint it at, we're all universal in our isolation, right? We're all together in how alone we feel, right? And that's the way out, in a way. But telling you the uncomfortable truths, the things you don't want to hear, the things you don't want to think about. But you talk about that arc, because just that OK Computer became a cultural zeitgeist. That time, what else was going on around that time, Paul? Like bubblegum pop was coming back, boy bands were coming back, like pop music was, I mean, it was 90s, it was the decade of one hit wonders, you know. It's when pop music was really becoming more like a formulaic, like they figured it out, they cracked the code. And much like Nirvana, and Nirvana brought in that short period when the music industry was run by all the weirdos, who, you know, it was very short. Isn't it funny that the Ticketmaster thing has come on, because Pearl Jam took on Ticketmaster, and that was sort of the pinnacle of that small era when the record companies were actually run by people who
cared.
And knew what was good or knew what resonated with people. And now this, is it the Swifties, the Taylor Swift fans, that they're going to take on?
They're suing, which I think is great.
That's awesome.
It's great.
Break up of the monopolies. Yes.
This is a monopoly that never should have been allowed to happen. They never should have been allowed to merge with Live Nation. This is, it was a horrible decision. I know a ton about Ticketmaster, and I'm not going to bore everybody with this, but here's the one thing I want you to know about Ticketmaster. Their entire business model is to be awful. To take the heat for everybody to be, their business model is to let you be angry at them. And here's the thing about,
Roger Goodell.
They are. That's exactly what they are. They're Roger Goodell. They're getting paid to be hated, to get booed on stage when, and they're a horrible company, lots of different ways, but the fees, right? You buy a $200 ticket and there's $80 of fees. And you're asking, what did I possibly get $80 of value out of this transaction on? And it's nothing. But what people don't know where that $80 goes, the artist, the venue, and Ticketmaster. But nobody wants to blame the artist and the venue, and they don't want to take heat on it, but they're getting paid on that.
Sure.
And Ticketmaster's is the front man for that anger.
Yeah. And it's, I don't even know where I'll just say this. I don't mind artists getting the money. So, the people that create the value should get the income, the commodity produced by that value. Anyway, bringing it back to Radiohead, and in some ways this ties into exactly what we're talking about, Paul, because against all odds, somehow OK Computer, I think there are two albums OK Computer and Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. I feel like we're just the exact moment, the exact album to capture something that was in the collective unconscious. And then I think the film is Meeting People is Easy, the documentary where they were traveling with Radiohead. And I think it sort of documents that Tom York is like the last person, much like Kurt Cobain, it's like the last person that should have been a rock star.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a rock star. He never wanted to be a rock star. He's not going to be a rock star. And I think that there is a deep dark place upon becoming as big as Radiohead got during that time. And Kid A and Amnesiac is what comes out of that. And I never sourced it, but I saw a quote that was something like Kid A's music about after we ruin the world, like what it's like after we ruin the world or something like that. Boy, doesn't that, and we still haven't caught up to Kid A. We still haven't caught up to Amnesiac and Kid A and Radiohead. And one of the things, there's so many things in this world, Paul, that just baffle me or confuse me. But knowing that Radiohead has been the biggest band in the world for a while, that makes
you
feel
good.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, OK Computer, when you listen to those songs, it had no right being the phenomenon that it was. It was not radio ready.
It's depressing.
I mean, Karma Police is the only song that was really, that you feel like could have been built for radio.
Right.
And it had other hits, you know, I appreciate that, but really I think only Karma Police is that way. I think it's a one of the great positive reflections of the taste of listenership worldwide that OK Computer did become embraced the way it was, because these are complex songs. These aren't toe tappers. Yeah. These aren't dance floor songs. These are songs that, that
unsettling, Paul. It's psychologically unsettling music.
In many ways it is. And it's very, these are challenging songs. And I love the fact that OK Computer got to where it eventually came.
I heard something recently about Eleanor Rigby, you know, the Beatles song, Eleanor Rigby, that it broke the mold in some ways for pop music, because it was about lonely people. It was about loneliness. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't, pop songs were not about, like, songs that charted were about happy things, or maybe like a breakup song or something like that, but certainly not a song about all the lonely people. And I think OK Computer and Radiohead's themes in general are about alienation and the tension between like the society at large, dollars and cents, right? Oh, like songs that about how like we as human beings are just being ground up, you know, we're just cannon fodder and how that feels. And then when it OK Computer, you get the encroaching like technology, surveillance,
Android, all of those things.
But I think my theory is that it's a that there's a concept there that it's a loop, because the last thing in the album is Slow Down. Hey, man, slow down. And the first thing in the album is the Airbag Saved My Life.
Oh, wow. I never caught that.
Yeah.
Oh, so
that's why you come on the couch, right?
That's very good. Right? That's such a good punchline. Okay, I'm going to leave. Since we're talking music, I'm just going to leave you on this. We're going way too long, but too bad. A couple of days ago, I asked Twitter followers.
Yes.
What one album is so universal, it could be in anybody's record collection? Right. So the idea is it's not, which is not the same as asking what's your favorite album of all time. Right. This is different. It's like, what is so universal that it could be in anybody's collection and people would appreciate that? I am curious if off the top of your head, and it's not really fair to ask this.
I did answread. I probably got lost down in the thread.
Okay. I did miss it. There were many answers.
I said Nina Simone, and it really didn't matter what. I mean, that's just I could pick out a song like I wish I knew how it was to feel be free, like Nina Simone, just Nina Simone. I thought about Louis Armstrong, but there's not really. Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World, or maybe like is playing it on his ukulele. But I think the that's a point we can all meet. That's a universal point that we can all meet. But I love that you are as passionate about so many things we talk about. Whiskey, board games, fantasy football, music. That's what we do on the couch. We do it because we love you and you're so classy.
Get a record player, start a record collection, because it's the ritual. It's marrying music back to ritual. And whenever you take your record out and you handle it very gently, because it's a precious thing, and you put it on the record and the sound of the needle going on the record, we all know what that means, how that prompts you, your whole life to remember it. It's a moment in your life when you slow down and you make yourself ready to receive something.
Is that a hot dog?
Don't worry about it.
Gattaca! We got like 5 minutes to get out of here.